How much money do you lose every time you miss a customer call? With a Buzz CRM, you never have to worry about that again. Their system automatically texts missed calls and engages leads instantly using conversational AI. It turns your missed opportunities into booked appointments automatically. It's a complete game changer for local businesses. Secure your access today for a massive discount at thebuzzcrm.com. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Thanks for joining me here on Bolton Business on CannabisRadio.com. Thank you all for joining us. Before we get started with our interview for this episode, I wanted to just go ahead and give a quick announcement to everyone out there that at the end of 2025, so there's three episodes left as I record this program, that I will be stepping down as host of Blunt Business and Grassroots Marketing, which I've been hosting since 2018, and I'll be moving on from Cannabis Radio. I am pursuing and exploring the opportunity to go ahead and continue a new cannabis series down the line. And if there is that opportunity, I hope to go and continue to talk about the cannabis industry going forward. But at this time, I'm going to be making a change and stepping away from these programs and the network, of which I've been grateful for to be a part of for the last 10 years since the inception of Cannabis Radio, and also the parent company being with them for over 20 years. So over 400 episodes of this program, and I've really enjoyed the experience. I've learned a whole lot from it, and I appreciate all of you listeners for sticking through all these programs and letting me learn along with you and allowing me to have a voice for this industry that I hope doesn't have to go silent, that it can continue to be, I can continue to open the door for more guests like we've had here in the past to continue to go ahead and strive on and look into the future of what this industry is, which is what we're going to talk about a little bit today with my guest, because we're looking at the potential for cannabis reclassification. And so much more we've also followed along with my guest that I spoke with back in April. Once again, So to talk about all this more, I'm welcoming back on the chair of the Cannabis, Hemp, and Psychedelics Practice Group at Mandelbaum Barrett PC, Joshua Bochner. Joshua, thanks for being back.
Thanks for having me again. And before we begin, thanks for all you've done over the past few years with Cannabis Radio, and wish you all the best of success and luck with your next venture.
Thank you, Josh. And I'd like to go and continue this on. It's just that we're going to close this out, and you know, I want to make sure we can go and continue this if we can down the line in the future. So let me get into where we are with the executive order that is being reported now by Bloomberg and CNBC that I saw this past Friday. Shocking to see this towards the end of the year, but might be a Christmas present in hiding. So reports are suggesting that President Trump may issue an executive order directing the move of cannabis from schedule to schedule three, but the Controlled Substances Act requires the DEA to follow a specific multi-step rulemaking process based on the Department of Human Health and Human Services recommendation, which was in play from President Biden back in 2023 or 22, I forget. And so now we never got a continuation of that. We did get the DEA administrator confirmed back in June, but nothing has happened since then. The administrative law judge that was presiding over the case was taken, was retiring. They never replaced him, I guess. I don't know if they ever appointed somebody else to be in that court to see that case. But in your experience in high stakes litigation, Joshua, what's the realistic legal leverage of such an executive order? And I mean, it looks like what the executive order was being reported to do is that it would compel the DEA to expedite the final rule, bypass the administrative hearing, or even lead to a legal challenge on the grounds of procedural overreach. What do you tell me about that?
Well, look, whether you love him or hate him, it's indisputable that Trump gets things done.
Yep.
Legally, illegally, constitutionally, unconstitutionally, he certainly moves the needle on a lot of issues. Cannabis reclassification certainly being one among many. And I think what's really remarkable is that this does fall within the scope of this concept of a unitary executive. You know, Dick Cheney famously brought it to bear during George W. Bush's administration. It, you know, waned and with certain success and failures over a term. We understand that Trump has said, you know, he learned from a lot of the mistakes and hurdles that were erected in his first administration, and he's overcoming them now. So, frankly, from my perspective, and we could certainly get into the regs and the role of Congress, the role of the DEA, the role of the FDA, the advantage of a unitary executive, the advantage of a President Trump, is that he believes he can do pretty much whatever he wants with a pen stroke. And, you know, again, right, wrong, or otherwise, here we are waiting for, I mean, whether you want to go back to the 1970 and the CSA, or all the way back to 1937 and the Marijuana Taxation Act, we're finally at a point where we might find that marijuana is reclassified and no longer Schedule I narcotic, where the federal government belatedly recognizes the medicinal value that 38 states, 40 states and counting have long been warranted.
So now I'm taking a story from Cannabis Business Times that they were talking about the fact that President Trump told media members that when he was asked about this, he's not only looking at reclassifying cannabis to Schedule 3, he's now, quote unquote, considering it too. And that he would look to do that executive order. And that comes 4 months after telling reporters we're only looking at that. And this administration would decide on the matter over the next few weeks.
So it moves quickly. He moves quickly. You know, there's some people who would say who's ever in his ear last drives the agenda. We do know that he held a meeting, I believe it was last week, and he was in the Oval Office with a lot of his advisors who were promoting reclassification. He was on the line with members of Congress, some of whom I think were opposed to reclassification. And his advisors were basically helping him rebut their arguments against. And at the end of the conversation, as I understand it, he was very firm in his belief that reclassification was appropriate and rebuffed the arguments that he was hearing from members of Congress to the contrary. So again, regardless of whether Congress does have a role here, it sounds like he's going to do what he wants. And if fast is prologue, those members of Congress who oppose, certainly the ones who are in his party, they do control both the houses, will get in line. And we'll see reclassification at the federal level.
Also in this Cannabis Business Times article, they also make the point about what would open up in barriers of research. So some cannabis industry stakeholders are saying that it would not unlock certain barriers to research. That's according to Normal, that they said that the process to conduct clinical trials would remain unduly onerous. But there is the word that rescheduling cannabis would allow the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy to finance or sponsor research, which cannot be done under the Schedule I status. And there was also the word that why this is being considered right now and why we think this is going to be, there's something more doing to be done with this. Because this was somewhat of a campaign promise. The idea that this would be looked at. And December 10th, there was a report that a private meeting was held in the Oval Office to discuss this potential executive order. Cannabis industry executives were on hand, as well as Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Mehmet Oz from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, reported by Washington Post. And House Speaker Mike Johnson's opposed the plan when he's spoken to him about it, but the president is ready to move on with reform, including reporting that he's expected to issue that executive order directing top officials in his cabinet, to reclassify, but that he hadn't finalized the decision. So there's people also that are going to be pushing back on this move. Even the U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi also looking to go ahead and say that they were kind of, I guess, they just kind of go along because of the fact that it would be long, more than has ever been done on cannabis reform. Yes, it was October 22 that President Biden did this. So again, we've been looking at this for over 3 years, and I mean, it's going to happen anyway. I think there's been enough momentum, stop and start, that we're going to get to that point. When you talk to, say, your clients, or when you're looking at yourself at the headlines, I mean, it's just a matter of, do you see that we're just going to finally just get to it? Is it just inevitable?
I don't believe anything's inevitable in Washington as a general proposition. I will say that December 10th meeting is, of course, the one that I was referencing in the Oval, where there was a lot of advocates for declassification in Trump's ear, and he seemed to take the bait on that. I'll also say I'm a member of NORWL. I'm a member of their legal committee, their amicus committee. And yes, there are concerns that reclassification is insufficient. NORWL, of course, as do I, prefers declassification, not reclassification. But there can be no question that this is a step forward. I think NORWL's concern, which is not illegitimate, is that if we get reclassification, things will go dark for another 50 years before we can get to declassification. And everyone wants to strike while the iron's hot. So rather than just settle for reclassification, we've got the Oval's attention, we've got arguably Congress's attention and the executive's attention. Let's not settle, and let's push this all the way across the finish line to declassification. From my clients, from a research perspective, which you did ask, I think that's the consideration. But we're seeing a lot of research institutes now engage in cannabis research where for years they were afraid to do so because of Schedule I classification for fear of losing federal funds. So any university that has a research arm that wanted to touch cannabis didn't want to lose those federal funds because they were doing something they weren't supposed to do. That's been kicked to the wayside for a number of years already. And in fact, we're seeing a number of university research institutions also explore psychedelics, even though there's technically that prohibition, and they're doing it kind of on their own outside of what we would normally consider the appropriate parameters. And this is all about getting medicine to people. And I think the frustration has built so much for a few reasons that a lot of folks are just not going to tolerate these federal prohibitions and restrictions. For example, I am a big believer that we would not have suffered and continue to suffer an opioid crisis in this country if cannabis were readily available. It is a non-addictive payment. It addresses a lot of the issues that opioids address without the addiction and, frankly, without the risk of overdose. You want to be world famous, you can be the first person to overdose on cannabis. Just hasn't happened. We're certainly learning more. We're learning about cannabis use disorders, scrominging, other issues where people are using it to excess, but there's no yet science that really confirms it's physiologically addictive like an opioid. Similarly, both cannabis and psychedelics, for that matter, provide incredible treatment value for PTSD. And we are still only recently having concluded our longest war in Afghanistan, war on terror. And we have, as you well know, tens of thousands, no, millions of people who are returning from those battlefields with PTSD. And rather than prescribe them antipsychotics and other addictive pharmaceutical medications, they're able to treat microdose with cannabis, microdose with psilocybin, and live lives happily without the PTSD constantly interfering and without the risk of pharmaceuticals destroying their lives. So I think everyone is now kind of recognizing the value proposition of medicinal use, which is, again, a further reason to reclassify, if not declassify, and allow it to open up to people who are in need for this medicine. And again, when we have the 40 states, Guam, D.C., already recognizing that utility, it's only can be considered burying your head in the sand.
Yeah, pushback's not going to push back much farther.
Exactly. And remember, over those 40 states, the majority are Republican. They're red.
Now, let's go ahead and take a commercial break. When we come back, one of the wrinkles into this whole thing is that does Trump have to go ahead and direct the DEA or the HHS to go ahead and reclassify? Maybe not. We're going to talk about that here with Joshua Bogner. chair of the Cannabis, Hemp, and Psychedelics Practice Group at Mandelbaum Barrett PC here on Blunt Business. And we'll tell you what that other wrinkle might be after a short break.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
How much money do you lose every time you miss a customer call? With a Buzz CRM, you never have to worry about that again. Their system automatically texts missed calls and engages leads instantly using conversational AI. It turns your missed opportunities into booked appointments automatically. It's a complete game changer for local businesses. Secure your access today for a massive discount at thebuzzcrm.com. That's thebuzzcrm.com. Tired of social media censorship? Frustrated by restrictions on TV, billboards, and traditional radio? CannabisRadio.com is the only platform where you can connect directly with over 1 million dedicated listeners without the limitations. Advertise your product freely to high-value, educated decision makers. Launch your unrestricted campaign today. Email Brasco, B-R-A-S-C-O, at CannabisRadio.com. We're back on Blunt Business with Joshua Bochner, chair of the Cannabis, Hemp, and Psychedelics Practice Group at Mandelbaum Barrett PC. So the other part that Cannabis and Business Times, I'm taking this article that came out, said that should President Trump direct Attorney General Pam Bondi to reschedule cannabis, couldn't actually do that. Instead, go to the Department of Justice to do so. Within the executive branch, the Controlled Substances Act vests the Attorney General with the authority to schedule, reschedule, or decontrol drugs. And this is a 21 USC 811A, subset A. While the Attorney General has traditionally delegated the authority to the DEA, legal experts argue that the Attorney General holds the power to reclaim this authority and unilaterally issue a final rule on cannabis rescheduling. Therefore, DEA Administrator Terrence Cole, regardless of position on cannabis, could be inconsequential should Trump issue the executive order. Have you heard about this part, and do you think this would hold?
I have. I mean, it certainly holds on paper. I don't think it's going to hold in practice. Again, we have the unitary executive and we have Trump using his pen as a blunt instrument. I do not think that Pam Bondi is going to say no to the commander in chief on this. She is indebted to him for any number of reasons. And she has shown that without getting too much into the politics, any of the prosecutions he's asked her to conduct, any of the U.S. attorneys he's asked her to employ. I don't think she said no to him once. And similarly, I think anyone in the executive, including the heads of the FDA and the DEA, know that they're in political appointed positions and know that they can lose that position. I don't even think that would take a pen stroke. That would just take him saying you're fired, for which he obviously became very famous when he was on The Apprentice. So anyone who wants to keep their job is frankly going to have to do his bidding. I don't think there can be a lot of opposition. Anyone who has evidenced opposition in the past is no longer around in a position to do so. So, yes, there is certainly a process, as you referenced, in the U.S. Code to do this. It involves technically a lot of study by the DEA, the FDA, and we can certainly, circumscribe that process pretty readily right out of the Oval. I'll also say, again, love him or hate him, he gets it done. We've been litigating this issue for years. We filed an amicus brief with the U.S. Supreme Court to try to address this issue on behalf of a Washington, a former New York Jets football player who's using it for medicinal value. Unfortunately, Justice Ginsburg passed, so we lost our fourth vote for cert. But, we've been trying to convince these federal agencies for years of the medicinal value of cannabis, study after study. Our amicus brief actually was about athletes called Athletes for Care. And we reviewed, I think it was 8 or 9 different athletes who had suffered various injuries, everything from just, the pain and strain of being a competitive athlete to those who had suffered injuries from car accidents or others and were very protective of their bodies and didn't want to risk opiates. So they used cannabis. And we had a whole brief that recounted the history of cannabis criminalization all the way back again to 1937. Harry Anslinger, one of the demons in all of this, on through evidencing the value. We know this. The problem is when we deal with the FDA and DEA, they ignore it. They go back to studies from the 60s and 70s that were designed to find that cannabis was a gateway drug, that were designed to find that cannabis was a safety threat, that were designed to find that cannabis put children at risk. I mean, these studies were constructed and contrived to find negative results. And so the FDA relies on these old studies, notwithstanding new current science that proves just the obvious, and won't get out of our way and won't get out of their own way as a result. So to a certain extent, eliminating from the process, eliminating their ignorance from the process, helps us get the job done.
Now, we've also gone through a couple of different areas also when it comes to reclassification, the possibilities of it. Let's go and revisit once again Section 280E, the IRS Code 280E, that still leaves cannabis federally illegal. But the one thing is, at this point, I mean, just the note of the consideration from President Trump has helped the stocks for cannabis take a nice extra cash in for the end of the year, 12% strike for or hike up for Tilray Brands, among those others. And Canopy Growth has also seen growth. So for them, they're just happy to go and get that momentum because, of course, that will just work out for them in a positive manner. But we still don't know what it would be like. I mean, no matter what, we're looking at just reclassification. That's what is being considered is the target word. But it would still be a new complex federal status. Schedule 3 controlled would have come with an accepted medical use, but still lack FDA approval. Still potentially subject to federal trafficking laws impacting existing state legal cannabis businesses, particularly regarding interstate commerce, federal intellectual property rights, and the future of the Safe Banking Act. The thing is, you know, we might get all this, but still from the investment sense, you know, I don't think investors, I don't know if investors are ready to go ahead and start pouring money into the market once again, into the industry.
Well, I mean, you know, that's part of the problem with reclassification as opposed to declassification. It might resolve some problems, but it creates a host of other problems. So now, to your point, all of these dispensaries that have been operating under state law, and in most instances, highly restrictive, complicated, ever-changing state law that makes it nearly impossible to ensure compliance, are now going to have an entire other layer of regulations on top of them in the guise of the federal law. And that can itself be an insurmountable hurdle. In addition to that, you will arguably need a prescription for cannabis. As we now know, doctors can't prescribe cannabis because doctors are regulated by the FDA at the federal level. Cannabis is illegal at the federal level. They can recommend, you go to your dispensary, you get your recommended medicinal cannabis. If it's going to be federal, you will need a prescription. You also arguably will need a pharmacist in every dispensary because those pharmacists are the only ones licensed to dispense a Schedule 3 narcotic. So every dispensary that's opened up with your lovely bud tenders who are competent and knowledgeable and sharing with you what works, what doesn't work, how it works, and all the rest could potentially be displaced by pharmacists. And then, of course, Jorge, there aren't enough pharmacists. I mean, it's just as a practical matter, you're not going to find enough pharmacists to be in every dispensary. And I'll note, when New York, where I am, originally created its medical program, and it required a pharmacist in each dispensary. And it was a joke because, firstly, the product was horrible. I mean, it was the worst product you can use for health reasons, was the worst product you could have for efficacy reasons. And when you talk to the pharmacists, they were a fish out of water because they're pharmacists. And all of a sudden, they're talking with you about a cannabis product. They didn't even have strains. It was just different oils, capsules, and a tincture. And basically, they didn't even have any real guidance they could provide you. But the state, in its infinite wisdom, said you need a pharmacist there. So these people who had all this wonderful training and thought they were helping people obtain medicinal cannabis were basically handcuffed because the offerings were so lousy at the outset. Again, government overreach has been the bane of the cannabis marketplace since the beginning. If the goal is to create a safe and regulated market, safe product, keep it away from children, for, you know, educate the consumer population, we don't need a host of regulations. We don't need government interference and intrusion.
Well, let me push back a little bit on this, Joshua, because for the free market, the free enterprise market, businesses want to be able to go ahead and have the advantage of that controlled, regulated market to be able to go ahead and put the price in. But if we go deschedule, let's just say we went that part, home grows would be absolutely made available, and people might not even consider to go to a store to go ahead and buy. They could go and just grow it at home. They can go and plant seeds and do whatever they wanted with it. Do you think that would be, I mean, do you think that even if it was a perfect idea to go ahead and deschedule and just open the door, wouldn't that just hurt the businesses?
I don't necessarily think so. First of all, it's actually fairly challenging to grow good cannabis.
But would people care if they did? Here's like this. Okay, say if it was open, okay, you don't maybe necessarily have to go and grow it yourself. You could also just go to an Indian reservation and they can grow it, or just whoever you want, they can just grow it for you. You can just buy from somebody that's, you know, like almost like, you know, buying, you know, coconuts off the street. We do it here in Miami. They have the thing where, like, you know, but I'm just saying you could just do it like that. It's almost like, you know, a farmer's market instead of a regular market.
Fine, but you could also grow your own tomatoes. You could also grow your own carrots, right? And you don't, right? I mean, I live in New York City. There's no farmland. You know, I have an office in Jersey, right? You can't grow most things in New Jersey because the soil's contaminated.
Yeah.
Very hard, or we would all be farmers still. So I yes, there's certainly going to be people who are going to engage your home grow. There's certainly going to be people who are creating artisanal product, growing artisanal product, selling it at farmers market and the like. But I think the demand is such that you're going to see that it's not going to hurt the dispensaries any more than, again, you know, cultivating any other plant has hurt commerce. And importantly, I think as the consumer market is becoming more educated out west, you certainly see it more than out east. People are going to want to go to a dispensary, have that conversation and engagement with the bud tender, and make the inquiry. I want this for sleep. I want this for appetite. God forbid, I want this for nausea from chemotherapy, whatever it is. People can't grow, most people at least, can't grow with that type of specificity to address what their needs are. And so I think there's always going to be a marketplace.
Now, the other one, I would listen, and I'm not trying to go ahead and put one side or the other to say this. I just figured as a devil's advocate, I could hear my listeners saying, okay, he keeps saying deschedule. The other thing I think about too is the quality. You know, there's the compliance issue that I talk about constantly on this program. I've talked about it for a long time, that if you took away who is growing the cannabis, say if it is a home grow, they're not going to worry about, you know, what kind of yeast mold bacteria might be on it in particular. They might not care about, you know, what kind of potency is going to be. They could just go ahead and do whatever they want. It's just going to be roughshod. Do you feel like there's something there where then you take away what the compliance is out there, which is already bare minimum for many states, but you could just open the door could be open where the quality is out there could make it a little bit hazardous.
No question, and that's part of this safe regulated market idea. Home grow is for personal use.
Yeah.
If you're growing home grow and you're trying to sell it in the market, different conversation. That's not home grow anymore. That's not for personal use. And I think there's a bright line distinction there. And I'm not so naive. Personal use, Jorge, you want to come over to my place sometime? I've got some home grow, right? We'll spark a joint, pass and pop. We'll have a very nice time, right? But if you're going to take that home grow and you're going to try to sell it, that's an entirely different conversation. That, I think, undermines the safe and regulated market because, to your point, we need that market and those dispensaries and the entire supply chain, cultivation, manufacturing, all the way down through, because we want to see certificates of analysis. We want to understand potency. We want to ensure it's properly tested against mold and yeast and pesticides and metals, right? That's why, again, I think that safe and regulated market has a value that's not going to be displaced by home grow. Because you can go in and buy something from a dispensary and be confident that what you're getting is a safe and regulated product. It's like going back to, you know, 50 years ago, going to the guy in the corner. You don't know what you're getting. You don't know what it's contaminated with, whether it's PCP or oregano or something in between. The value of the safe and regulated market and the knowledgeable and educated consumer is that there's that pairing where they want to work together and support each other because of safety issues.
Now, I had to talk about the fact that for the last time we talked back in April, you're based in New Jersey, New York, and we had talked before about the workplace impairment recognition evaluators, or WIRES. Mm-hmm. Let me go back into that subject real quick, because when you look at the resistance to relying on drug recognition evaluators stemming from legal and scientific validity limitations that were established when cannabis was Schedule 1, if we get this reclassification, does that undermine scientific legal basis of DREs and by extension subjective behavioral observations essential to the wire mandate. So scientific consensus, new testing technology, would that be necessity? I mean, what would really change of that? And how, you know, you, if you want to go and have, you know, people at the workplace, go ahead and take that distinction off of the drug testing goes away or is changed to not include cannabis.
Well, look, the wire issue and the DRE issue is paramount. Regardless of whether it's reclassified, declassified, or otherwise, you should not be impaired in the workplace, and you certainly should not be impaired on the roads. And I don't care whether that's cannabis, alcohol, or anything else. The challenge, to your point, is identifying impairment versus intoxication. And as you know, intoxication just means it's in your body, right? You smoke a joint on Friday night, you're still technically going to be intoxicated come Monday morning when you go to work. You will not, however, be impaired. And that's the difference. What we don't have is a study, a test to determine impairment in the workplace, or for that matter, a roadside impairment test. And I tell clients all the time, forget getting a license to sell cannabis. You come up with a roadside sobriety test for cannabis. You'll sell it to every law enforcement agency on the planet. You could retire tomorrow. That is very much the challenge. There's been a lot of fits and starts. We work with a couple of companies that try to do things through ocular testing. A lot of it requires, however, a baseline. So it is a real challenge. But the challenge does not change because of the declassification or the reclassification. It's already extant. With respect to the workplace, it is. It's a very challenging undertaking to ensure someone is not impaired on the job. Because again, it's not just cannabis, right? People are using all sorts of drugs these days, good, bad, or otherwise. But it's certainly, no one should be impaired on the job. No one should be impaired operating a motor vehicle. And we do need to recognize we are getting ahead of the science a little bit in that regard because of the prohibition on studies for so many years. And we certainly do need to recognize the hazards that come from that.
Okay, we're going to be coming back with final questions right now. One important question that's going to just be the standout. If there's a trade-off that the industry would accept, I'm going to just leave it at that. Here with Joshua Bachner, chair of the Cannabis, Hemp, and Psychedelics Practice Group at Mandelbaum Barrett PC here on Butt Business. Back with final questions after this. How much money do you lose every time you miss a customer call? With the Buzz CRM, you never have to worry about that again. Their system automatically texts missed calls and engages leads instantly using conversational AI. It turns your missed opportunities into booked appointments automatically. It's a complete game changer for local businesses. Secure your access today for a massive discount at thebuzzcrm.com. That's thebuzzcrm.com. Tired of social media censorship? Frustrated by restrictions on TV, billboards, and traditional radio? CannabisRadio.com is the only platform where you can connect directly with over 1 million dedicated listeners without the limitations. Advertise your product freely to high-value, educated decision makers. Launch your unrestricted campaign today. Email Brasco, BRASCO, at CannabisRadio.com. Welcome back to Blue Business. I'm back with final questions with Joshua Bachner, chair of the Cannabis, Hemp, and Psychedelics Practice Group at Mandelbaum Barrett PC. And if you haven't gone to the website, if you haven't looked at what his firm, the firm that he represents, works on, you should go and take a look. MBLawFirm.com, MBLawFirm.com. And you'll find more about that. We'll talk about how you can go and reach out to Joshua and his team just in a few moments. But first of all, I want to get back into another part. So we haven't talked about the federal ban on most intoxicating hemp products, Bob, being enacted in the most fiscal year 2026 agricultural appropriations law, which was signed last month, and that the new rules would effectively make most intoxicating hemp-derived products federally illegal starting November 2026. So the loophole that was created by the 2018 Farm Bill would be no longer effective. So the question for you, Josh, was that if we got reclassification and cannabis became closer to legalization and became the winning product over hemp, would you take that trade-off? Do you feel like, obviously we'd like to have both, but do you see that as a considerable trade-off if you have to go and just only grow cannabis from cannabis? You can't derive it from hemp.
No, I think it's a horrible fiction, and I think it's a legislative and a legal nightmare. Okay. Marijuana and hemp both come from the same plant. They are both cannabis. And the fiction between the two is a fabrication of the legislature. Mm-hmm. The Farm Bill 2018, 0.3% Delta 9 THC by dry weight is a fiction. It comes from a report that a couple of guys did a study on from, I think, 1974, where basically they wanted to determine how much Delta 9 it took to have a psychoactive effect to get high. So what they do, Ari, they smoked a lot of weed. And they determined using gas chromatography that the 0.3% threshold got them high. And in the report, they actually state this is just them. A couple of white guys, you know, 160 pounds, 23 years of age, whatever. It is not sacrosanct. That 0.3 threshold then became federal law and the bottom fell out. I think we should not prejudice, distinguish between the two in the first place. It's all cannabis. Let's create a safe and regulated market for all cannabis, hemp and marijuana. Now, look, we recognize the whole point of the Farm Bill was creating a hemp industry, commercial hemp industry. George Washington was famously a hemp farmer, fabric sales, ropes, what have you. We can do that. But if we're going to have intoxicating hemp, we should treat it like intoxicating marijuana and regulate them all in the same fashion, rather than have them, as what's happened, become enemies of each other. The hemp industry hates the marijuana industry. The marijuana industry is targeting the hemp industry, and government doesn't know the difference. I have had not once, but twice, law enforcement officials testify under oath that they can smell Delta 9 concentrations in flower, and that's how they determine whether it's hemp or marijuana. That is an impossible, impossible thing to testify to truthfully. And if they actually believe it, it only only confirms their incompetence with what they're doing. They are raiding hemp licensees without a warrant, shutting them down and depriving people of their livelihood because they think they can smell Delta 9. It's absurd. And this fiction that was created by the legislature at the federal level and has now been adopted by the states hurts small businesses. It hurts the cannabis marketplace, marijuana and hemp. It puts us at odds with each other, and it undermines the entire industry.
Thank you for that. I wanted to go and just get where that comes from, because I have been asking, you know, for a little bit here, if people would feel comfortable if that's what was going to be the end result, because that might be the end result after all this is said and done. So I'm glad you shut the weed.
Yeah, but it's like we discussed, it's a fiction. There's no reason for it. It's all
I agree with that.
Regulate hemp, intoxicating hemp, like we're regulating intoxicating marijuana, because it's all intoxicating cannabis.
We're not here being paid the big bucks to go and figure out how Washington, D.C. works or how they think, but we'll continue to follow along a lot, pretty sure. So website is mblawfirm.com, mblawfirm.com, for Mandelbaum, Barrett, PC, attorneys of law. A lot of other fields that your team cover, but in particular, you are chairing the cannabis, hemp, psychedelics portion of the firm. So tell me about, you know, for those that want to go ahead and they're seeking legal counsel in those fields, tell them how they could reach out to you and why.
Sure. Thank you. First, you heard the website. My email address is my name, Jay Bauchner, J-B-A-U-C-H-N-E-R at mblawfirm.com. And my cell phone is 646-369-0250. We have been in this space for nearly a decade, which on the East Coast, I think, really says something. I personally started representing High Times Magazine back in the day in its original incarnation, really opened up my eyes to what's happening out West, coming East. So we've really had the advantage of being in the vanguard in the space throughout the East Coast, primarily in the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. And I've been, you know, with all modesty, termed a thought leader in the space, really advancing legislative reform like what we've been discussing today. At the federal and state level, we represent clients across all license types, cultivators, manufacturers, producers, delivery, dispensary, and the rest, help getting operational, help ensuring compliance, help with employee issues, and everything in between. We are huge advocates for the plant. As I mentioned, I've been a member of the Normal Legal Committee and Amicus Committee. We filed that petition at the Supreme Court. We're litigating some psychedelics issues out in the Ninth Circuit. We firmly believe that Mother Nature provides. And I think with that, we are really aligned with a lot of the interests of those who are out there doing God's work and bringing the plant to the masses.
Fantastic. So mblawfirm.com. By the way, the firm itself, since 1930, it's almost 100 years been in existence, and over 30 practice areas besides cannabis, hemp, and psychedelics. Joshua Botner, thank you again for being on the program. Really appreciate it. Take your time out, as always.
Absolutely. Thank you. All right. Pleasure.
All right. Thank you, folks, for listening to Bud Business. We'll talk to you next time.
You got it.
How much money do you lose every time you miss a customer call? With the Buzz CRM, you never have to worry about that again. Their system automatically texts missed calls and engages leads instantly using conversational AI. It turns your missed opportunities into booked appointments automatically. It's a complete game changer for local businesses. Secure your access today for a massive discount at thebuzzcrm.com. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.